We're on page 27 in our study book. It's lesson 7 in the last week. I don't feel like I need to tell you again why that happened, but we'll either gain ground or cover it in a Sunday morning sermon if we don't get through all the material by the end of the quarter. This lesson deals with vision, and I'm asking the question in this lesson, whose duty or responsibility is it? I'm not saying that it's the case here, but I know many times the thinking of individuals is, let's just put it on whoever goes out and does it, and maybe shirk that responsibility or pass that responsibility onto someone else. But I was impressed with how close and visiting and hospitality is to one another. What do you think that is? Why would visiting and hospitality be close to one another? As you went over your material in the book, hopefully you did before this morning, and began to think about visiting, what might that have to do with being hospitable? In what ways could it? There's some overlapping between the two.
Those concerned for the needs of others.
Yeah. You can't do either one of them without being concerned about other people. Have the attitude that other people matter, that it's not always about me. By the way, does anybody need a book to borrow this morning? I think we have. Okay. If you two want to sit together, I think there's one more book in the back under the seat, Tracy, that they can have, maybe they can share with one another. Okay. Bernice has one, and Marilyn needs the other. But to be concerned about other individuals, it gets difficult. I know this is one of those commands that we have that's easier. And she has one more, she said. That's easier to say than actually to fulfill for various constraints that we have. What might be some obstacles to visiting other people? You don't have any obstacle? You know, I'll throw some out to you because I have some. What about time? What about time management when there's so many things? You think about you parents, all of you here, that work or you're busy about doing other things and maybe your job is demanding your time, your family's demanding your time, the kids are demanding your time, your own personal studies demanding your time. Wednesday night services and Sundays demanding your time. When are you possibly going to have time to get out and visit somebody else? You ever feel that way? I'm sure we've all felt that way. But it's still important that we do it. There's some consequences to a failure of vision, not just because we fail in our responsibility to God, but because of the things that we'll look at that it accomplishes when we visit. Well, when we fail to visit, those things are not accomplished. I know it's difficult to always find time to do all that we know we should be doing. I've stated, I still feel this way. On Mondays, I'll sit down and I'll plan out what I think that I'd like to do for the week or things that have to be done by a certain time and things that I'd like to accomplish. And guess what? By the time Friday, it's gone. Saturday's gone. It's another week. And we didn't get all those things accomplished. We probably all feel that way. And probably the more that we grow, the more and stronger we have a desire to do more in the Lord's kingdom. So, you've got to recognize that. And I say that for the point of saying we can't beat ourselves up over it either. But if we can do better, let's do better. And do the best that we can with the time and the energy that we have. What is visioning? You tell me, when you think about visioning, what comes to mind? And most of the time, what do we think about? Visiting.
You go to someone's home.
Yeah.
Person.
Right. Doing a home visit. Going to their home. Somebody else say the same thing or something different. That's often what we think about. That's what visiting is. We think about going to their house and sitting down and spending some time with them, right? This is going and being there. Or it may not be in their home. We'll talk about some of those other. It may be in the hospital. But spending time with somebody in the hopes that we'll encourage and edify them. But when we look at what the word actually means, maybe it's just not centered on a personal visit to that person, even though that's certainly part of it. But the word visit comes from a Greek word, and I put it in there and of it and what it would appear to how you would pronounce it. I'm not even going to attempt it. But it's been defined as John's meaning to inspect by implication, to select by extension, to go see or relieve. But again, you cannot do that. I cannot do that if I don't have an interest in someone else. Just like hospitality. If we're not concerned about somebody, if we are so self-centered that we think that it all revolves around me and it's about myself and what I stand to benefit from, then we're not going to fulfill, likely not going to fulfill, our responsibility to visit or to be hospitable, to show concern, to inspect. Listen, by the way, how would inspecting, what would that have to do with visiting? That impressed me when I looked at that and looked at the words that's used. Is that it's not just to go and just to sit down and say, hey, it was good to see you, talk to you later. But it's actually to see and to seek out what can I do for that person. Now, sometimes we may not know what to do for another person. Sometimes you can ask them, people just not going to tell you for pride or they don't want to be a burden or whatever it is. But to show concern and inspect and relieve that individual. And there's a lot of different ways that that can be done. So don't just allow that word to just have the idea in your mind of just dropping by to pay a little visit with somebody. And I'm checking off my weekly list and my glorified list, and now I fulfill my responsibility because I went for 5 minutes. Sit down and just talk to them. That's part of vision. But again, it's not the full capacity of visiting. So be mindful of that. In every case, it's with, rendered visit, with the sole exception being Acts 6:3, where it's rendered look ye out. What was the context of Acts chapter 6? We said, look ye out.
He was concerned with the Greek widows. To their needs.
So, again, this seeing to the needs of others, again, it's the same word that phrase came from, look ye out. In other places, it's rendered vision. You think that has anything to do with James 1:27, as we'll look at in just a moment? What does James 1:27 say?
Pure religion and undefiled visit the followers. I can't get it word for word.
That's right.
Visit the followers. With keep yourself up spotted.
Good. That's right. Look ye out to visit, to relieve, to inspect, to help render aid to somebody. Not just money, but assistance toward someone. So vision has the idea of inspecting, noticing, paying attention to, showing common concern for another.
On that, it's interesting, on 127, it talks about in their affliction. So they are a burden, they have a burden and a need that they do need. It's something that we do need to inspect and take notice of, but it's in their affliction.
And again, how can we possibly know whether it's the fatherless, the widows, how can we possibly know what their affliction or the case that's going on with them, understand the loss of the spouse, loss of parents, whatever the case may be, but just in general, other things that come up, if we don't notice, if we don't pay attention to other people. I'm telling you, it goes back to time. Not that we don't have time. As a good friend of mine had pointed out in lesson that, that he did before that. He said, I don't know about you, but where I live, there's 24 hours in a day. How much time is there where you live? We have the same amount of time, but the question is, what do we do with our time? And again, I know we're busy, but these things are important. So are the other things that we talked about with study, evangelism, hospitality, and all the other things that we've talked about thus far in the quarter, our individual work as members of the local church. So what does the Bible say about visiting? Number two, any thoughts or comments about point one before we move on?
Well, you know, I'm a widow, not even a guy who's ever been to these days. Now, what's the difference?
Hold on. I think I've been out there.
Maybe one time.
All right. The point is, be concerned about other people. Just came with you, Nathan. But the point is, show concern. Visit. And again, it's not just dropping by, even though that's part of it. If I'm in a position where I need somebody to talk with, you know, you may not know that. But I know where you live. Listen, I'll come in so I can talk with you. So if I need somebody to talk to, or I need somebody to pay attention to some of the concerns and needs that I have, get up and go. So visit with one another and do the things that we can do. Again, not just limited to a home visit. What does the Bible say about visiting? First of all, the Bible says that it has to be done. We can look at a host of passages, but we already talked about James 1:27. When there he's talking about pure religion. I already talked about man's religion being vain. But then he talks about pure religion and undefiled before God and the Father is this. To do this visiting with those that are afflicted in their current circumstances and things that may be going on with them. Pure means clean. Religion, ceremonial observance, and there's a lot. That's just a general definition if you were to look it up according to Strong's. But undefiled, unsoiled. Do you want undefiled religion? Do you want to be accepted before God? Yeah, I do too. We've got to keep ourselves unspotted, make sure that we're unsoiled, and that we do the things that God would have us to do. It's got to be done to... Brother, I invite you to turn to Matthew 25. Matthew 25:31-46. Someone volunteer to read that for us.
When the Son of Man comes in His glory and all the angels with Him, then He will sit on the throne of His glory, and the nations will be gathered before Him, and He will separate them one from another, just as a shepherd separates the sheep from the goats. He will put the sheep on His right and the goats on His left. Then the King will say to those on His right, Come, you who are blessed by My Father, inherit the kingdom prepared for you and from the foundation of the world. For I was hungry, and you gave me something to eat. I was thirsty, and you gave me something to drink. I was a stranger, and you took me in. I was naked, and you clothed me. I was sick, and you took care of me. I was in prison, and you visited me.
Read on through 46.
Then the righteous will answer him, Lord, when did we see you hungry and feed you, and thirsty and give you something to drink? When did we see you a stranger and take you in, or without clothes and clothe you? When did we see you sick or in prison or visit you? And the King will answer them, I assure you, whatever you did for one of the least of these brothers of mine, you did for me. Then he will also say to those on the left, Depart from me, you who are accursed, into the eternal fire prepared for the devil and his angels. For I was hungry, and you gave me nothing to eat. I was thirsty, and you gave me nothing to drink. I was a stranger, and you didn't take me in. I was naked, and you didn't clothe me. Sick and in prison, and you didn't take care of me. Then they too will answer, Lord, when did we see you hungry or thirsty, or a stranger, or without clothes, or sick, or in prison, and not help you. Then he will answer them, assure you, whatever you did not do for one of the least of these, you did not do for me either. And they will go away into eternal punishment, but the righteous into eternal life.
In the context of that, what, when the Lord opens up Matthew 25:31, what scene is he picturing for us and describing for us?
Comes in judgment.
Yeah. Judgment. We talked about all nations be gathered before him. He's going to make that separation. But then he points out the fact that I was naked, I was thirsty, I was hungry, and you either did these things or you didn't do these things. Lord, when do we see you like that? What did he say about that?
He's my brethren.
Yeah. You had opportunity to do it to these and you failed to do that, then that's the same as neglecting to do it to me.
Yeah, I'm going to tell you something else. He didn't put that in there for no joke either, brother. He meant just what he said.
That's right. That's right. So we see that those needs that others have, it has eternal consequences when we do not do it. And that's what the Lord is teaching here. Be concerned about other people. Do the things that you have with the opportunity and the ability that you have to do. What are those needs he talks about, by the way, again? Now listen, we live in a country where most people have most of the things, if not all the things that the Lord talked about. When you go back again to widows and you think about the fatherless, people who don't have parents, or people who have no way to, it gets tight. I know many people that I've talked to that have no problem certain times of the month, but you know what? When they're on a fixed income and it's before their check comes, things get pretty scarce and tight and they need help. That's most often the case. But if we see that, and we see that somebody needs a pair of shoes because the soles are coming loose or unglued or whatever the case is, or it's cold and they don't have a coat and we can provide it, what should we do? But sometimes we're married to our belongings, right? That's my stuff. They got themselves in that position. That's their own fault. Let them be cold and hungry. If they hadn't made the wrong choices, they could feed and clothe themselves. You know, that may be true, that as a result of what they did, led to their circumstance, but have some compassion on somebody. And they have more compassion on others. And I'll start with myself, don't we? Need to be concerned about others when we have the opportunity and the ability to do that. And so, first of all, the Bible says it must be done. Secondly, take that opportunity to do it. And thirdly, it's to be practiced on an individual basis. We don't serve God by proxy. You probably heard that phrase, whether it's our worship. In other words, you cannot do that on behalf of somebody else or in place of somebody else. You can't do my praying for me, can you? You can't do my worshiping for me. We can't put a choir up here and say, well, they'll go ahead and sing and we'll just sit and be quiet and let them do the singing for us. It won't work. We don't serve God that way. I'm responsible to God for the actions that God has commanded me to. And so it is with visiting. You can't do the visiting for me, can you? Elders and deacons and preachers can't do it for or in my place, can they? We do it as individuals. The church can't do my visiting for me. It's done on an individual basis, and again for the third time we looked at this morning, James 1:27. Point three, in what ways can visiting be done? Now, again, keep in mind that visiting means to inspect, to show concern, to relieve another. You know, when we talked about hospitality, we listed a number of ways that we could show forth hospitality. There's a number of ways in which we could relieve the afflicted, in which we could visit someone else. Let's think about that for a moment. Give me some ways in which you could visit someone that could be accomplished.
You can call.
You know, maybe you don't drive. or maybe it's bad weather, whatever the case is. Maybe you're not physically able to actually go and do a personal visit with that person. But we can call. What else can we do?
Send them a card or a letter.
Yeah, a card or a letter. By the way, there's a, in light of our technology and all the social media, that is the personal way to do things. Now, you could send a quick text, which I'm not down. You could still show concern by doing that. But to take the time out to sit down and write someone a card or whatever, and put that in the mail. Snail mail, right?
No, it's interesting. You read in Matthew 25, we talked about there that he was a stranger, someone unknown. And when you deal with Paul's writings in the book of Romans, he deals with this idea of adopted, that we were adopted sons, someone at one time without a father. And that God adopted us as sons, that stranger type. And he, if you will, provided for our needs, a relationship. We understand that what we're asked to do is what has already been done to us, and we in return are to do that to others, because at one time we were a stranger to him.
Very good point. Good point. Good.
Good. You know, Donnie, we can lay aside 1 hour, say, of the week. So I'm going to take off my hour in the morning and go visit some of my brother or sister that is sick. And we've never missed it.
Sometimes, sometimes we may just need to shuffle around our schedule and our priorities and maybe let something go in place to go and visit. That's right. So there was a slow. Where there's a will, there's a... Almost everybody knows that. But if we want it, typically we do what we want to do. At the end of the day, we've done what we want to do. So if we want to put the time in to go, we're going to find time to do that. And or maybe it may just be a phone call. Maybe you are busy. Maybe you do have a lot of responsibilities to where you couldn't get out personally. Maybe it is a text or a call or whatever it may be. So there are some other ways that I can inspect or relieve someone.
I work 6 days a week on sending the cattle and fencing and stuff like that. But I manage to call some of my brothers or sisters just about every day and ask them that if they need any help.
That's good. That's good, Nathan. It's a good example. So there's a lot we can do, a call or a card or actually a personal visit. But then, you know, then you go to someone's house and you know they're sick. What do you do then?
Ask them if you can do something to help them.
Yeah.
Bring them some groceries, bring them some food, or mow their yard. The Lord looks at stuff like that. No doubt He writes all that down as we do things for other people.
And you know what? And the case may be that you ask, is there anything that I can do for you? And they may say, I'm just fine. Maybe their needs are taken care of. Maybe they don't. But just your presence in that visit to be there and show concern was enough. Have you ever been in a situation where you told them, I'm not sure what to say or do, and they say, just your presence? Now, I doubt in my mind that many of you that have went to see Willard have heard those words. Anything to do for you? Just your presence here is all I need.
A lot of times in prayer, too, if there isn't a need, or they say there isn't, but just prayer with them is very, very beneficial.
That's right. That's good. I was at the bedside of a member of the church who passed away not long after that, and her family had been called in. I told her, I just know that lady all my life. But I didn't know what to say, and one of her daughters said, Donna, you don't have to say anything. There's nothing you have to say. Just be in here. There's a lot of ways, the point being, a lot of ways that we can visit. Have some other things you can do for others. I'll tell you something I'm encouraged, not that's only been shown toward me and my family, but that I've seen you do toward one another. And so many of you ladies, and probably some men, are so good at cooking. And I've noticed that a lot of you, when there's somebody sick or there's somebody that's in it, you ladies go to cook, firing up those ovens and baking that bread, cook, and you're very good at it. But that is just another tremendous help that you've done toward other people. And I've noticed a lot of you do that. A lot of men are good at farming, got really good green thumb, sharing those good, showing concern toward others. We're blessed here that so many of us, so many of you are concerned about others. That's a blessing. What are some other ways?
Take care of some of their errands that they needed done, bill paying or things like that.
You know, sometimes when you're sick and you can't get up, you just don't have the energy to go, or maybe you're tied down with a loved one. Tied down, I don't mean that negative way, but you know what I'm saying? You just don't have the time to be able to leave them to go do something. And it would be nice if you had to go have something done for somebody to say, hey, I'll go take care of that for you.
That's a lot of these old people have to tap in their medicine brought to them too, but that's one good thing that we could do to go get their medicine and bring it back to them so they can help them in their health.
That's right. We've got less than 10 minutes, but I want to say this as well. Not only do we have to be a good giver, we made this point along the way in the quarter, but we've also got to learn how to be a good receiver. Sometimes people want to do us good, and for whatever they're... No, don't do that. And what does that do?
Discourages.
Yeah. I mean, here they are, they want to... They are so happy that they have, even if it's something small, but they are so happy that they've got the opportunity and the ability, because sometimes we might have opportunity, but not the ability. And now here they have the opportunity and the ability, the means to help you. No, I don't want that. I understand we don't want to be a burden on people. But if you want to help me, I ought to be able to say, you know, I appreciate that. It's so kind and nice of you, and appreciate her back and forth. But you know, sometimes we don't even let our needs be made known to somebody. And then, after, well, guess what? I had a need and nobody, what? If I have a need, voice that. That's what, are we not in one family? The family of God. If I have a need, I need to be able to say, hey, brother, can you help me with this? I understand we shouldn't have to be asked. But listen, there's some needs that you may have that I don't know about. And there may be things that I have going on that you don't know about. And Galatians said, bear you one another's what?
Burdens.
So fulfill the law of Christ, Galatians 6:2. That's as an individual, the chapter sets that out, the context of. And we need to be persistent in doing it. Why is it? We'll do this and then the questions. One reason is we've already talked about it's commanded. Someone said, well, that's not good enough. That's not a good enough reason. Yes, it is. We need to be able to accept that when God says it, that's good enough reason. If there was no further explanation than to get up and go do it, that's good enough. Our Lord said to do it. Right? Sometimes we tell our children, Dad, why do I have to? Because I said so. Do we not? Are you guilty of saying that to your kids? I am, Keith. And why do I don't want? Because I said so, that's good enough. You can explain later what it is. But because the Lord commanded it. But there's other reasons too. Hebrews chapter 10, verse 24, what does he say?
Both one another.
Yeah. Unto what?
Good works.
Love and good works. What's that? When you can, 6 days out of the week when you're working on the farm and you can call somebody or multiple people every day of the week, that's a good example, and that ought to rub off on every one of us, right? To provoke unto love and good works. And then he goes on with that very familiar verse after that, right? Consider one another to provoke unto love and good works. Again, we want to be a good example of the believers, 1 Timothy 4:12. Paul's writing to Timothy. Be an example of the believers. We are to let our lives shine before others. Matthew 5:16. Not so that I can get a pat on the back, But so that people can see our good works and do what? Glorify God. To God be the glory in all that we do. Tell us where to love one another. John 13:35. It's a mark of a disciple. By this, by what? By this shall all men know that ye are my disciples.
If you keep the commandments, if you love one another.
If you have love one toward another. People will see it. People will know. People will say, let's go on down there to that place where they meet at 415 North Mill Street. I've heard about that group. They're busy about whatever it may be. By this shall all men know that you're my disciples. It is so. Let's go over to the questions briefly. What does the word visit mean? Everybody have their questions filled out? One person, shake or nod. No, you don't have to do that. No, that's right. Inspector, to go see. How many times does the Greek word, which is the original word for a visit, appear in the New Testament?
11
times. James 1:27, we pounded that this lesson. If the individual wants to have pure and undefiled religion before God, what is he to do? That's right. That's a full-time job for Donny Oliver. His cell, unspotted from the world. Number four, is vision to be practiced on the individual level or by the collective body, and how do you know? By the individual, right? In other words, the local church can't do that in your place. How do we know that?
The context is an individual context.
That's right. Context decides for it. Listen, ways vision may be performed.
Home visit, call.
Cards. Going to the hospital. Whatever the case may be. Health assist. List at least four reasons why one should visit.
Because it's commanded.
That's right. It's commanded. Edifies, right? Provoke unto love and good works. The Lord said so. And by the way, as you would have men do unto you, do ye also what? And listen, when I'm down and out, I want people to see me and visit me and help me. So I need to do that towards someone else. True or false? Vision is sole responsibility of the elders, deacons, and or the evangelists.
False.
Vision has no value to the one doing the visioning.
False.
Vision is optional.
False.
Whether or not one visits another has nothing to do with Jesus.
False.
That's right. It's a good lesson. Next week, try to get your questions filled out if you have opportunity, but we're going to talk about vision, the widows and orphans, a lot of division among the body of Christ over that. Need be no division. The Bible's clear about it. We'll talk about it next week. Appreciate your good attention.